Hey guys, this is Kevin Ward. I'm the founder of MixCoach.com, an author. I wrote a book called Pro Tools 9, The Mixer's Toolkit with a friend of mine. It's on Amazon. I'm also a multi-award-winning producer, songwriter, and mixer, and I love all things music and creative. And I'm really, really glad that you're here. I'm glad that you found me on the World Wide Web. I started MixCoach back in 2010 by creating a tutorial video on how to mix jazz and big band. And I created a YouTube channel, I created a podcast, and then after that I created a membership site where I've given advice and direction to thousands and thousands of mixers from around the world and helped them improve their mixing. I have a few really important things that I want to share with you in the next few minutes, so make sure you listen to the very end, and I promise I will try my best not to bore you. Okay, so let's jump right in, okay? Okay, one mistake that I see a lot of mixers make, young and old, I've done it myself, is they don't use a reference mix. I think using a reference mix is like one of the fastest ways that you can improve your mixing. So you may think, why would I use a reference mix? Why do I want to like copy from and steal other people's ideas and other mixers' things? Well, I'm saying it's not cheating. You're not cheating when you listen to a reference mix. As a matter of fact, I just read an interview from Tom Lord Alge that Waves did on Tom Lord Alge. Chris Lord Alge is the same way. I read this several years ago, and I had to go search for it. He says, and I'm reading here, I was listening to a lot of Bob Clearmountain's mixes, and I loved how he made the drums so upfront and aggressive. That, plus Mike Shipley's mixes for the Def Leppard Pyromania record, were my point of reference for the overall EQ curve and drum level. So I tried to make the drums as aggressive as possible. That made all the other stuff a bit more in your face. Okay, did you notice that he said reference, that he referenced it, that he listened to Mike Shipley, he listened to Bob Clearmountain, which are big influences on him. He made sure that his drums sounded like Bob Clearmountain's drums. Now, do you discount Tom Lord Alge's mixes or Chris Lord Alge's mixes because they referenced a mix? No, you don't. You don't. Because that's how you get better. That's how mixes just keep continuously getting better over the years. I mean, people are referencing better and better mixes. And if you don't have a playlist on Spotify, you should, of course, after you get finished listening to this, you should go and start a Spotify playlist or an iTunes playlist, or if you're old school, grab some CDs and pull them into into a folder where you can easily access them. There's plugins that you can buy that will allow you to reference mixes within your session, or you can just drag them into your session and mute them, and then unmute them when you want to reference your mix and say, hey, I wonder how my snare is sounding, or I wonder how my overall level is sounding. And then you just kind of bounce back and forth between those mixes and you see where you are. So if you don't have a target to shoot for, how are you going to know you got there or not? I mean, how are you going to know if you're marking improvement? You're not. So my advice to you is to get yourself a good set of reference mixes. Now, I have reference mixes. I mix a lot of different styles of music. I mix everything from bluegrass to orchestral to rock and roll to country to a cappella. I mean, you name it, I've mixed it because I've been mixing for 25, you know, almost 30 years now. So I have reference mixes from some of my favorite mixers where I feel like they nailed a mix, and there's just a mix that stands up and it stands the test of time. That mix is going into my reference pile, and I'm going to be using it occasionally or often. So you should create a playlist and reference those things as often as you can. Okay, so here's some advice when it comes to a playlist, okay? First thing is that don't try to reference their mastered mix against your unmastered mix. And the easiest way I found to do that is just to pull their mix down by 3 dB. So literally when you drag it into your session, just pull it down 3 dB. That way you're referencing not their level, you're referencing their tone, the volume of their mix. And keep in mind too that theirs is mastered. And if you're going to get your mix mastered, then you should leave a little room, and this 3 dB buffer will help you to do that, okay? Here's my second piece of advice when it comes to, you know, referencing. And that is make sure that the target you're shooting for is something that your client likes also. Okay, so if you're referencing Def Leppard, like, let's just go back to the Chris Lord Alge and the Tom Lord Alge reference. If you're referencing one mix that your client has never heard of and doesn't like, or has heard and doesn't like, or they have something that they are just wild about and you've never heard it, you should at least listen to what they're talking about and get on the same page with them. You almost can't ask too many questions to your client when it comes to, hey, what kind of mix are you loving right now? And if they don't have a good answer, then you just go to your pile of reference mixes and you listen to those, okay? And you reference them. So you need to shoot at the target that your client is holding. I mean, not literally, but you want to make sure that what you're shooting for is something they also like. Because here's what could happen if you're not careful. They could say, we love this mix right here. And they give it to you and you think it's not good. But you go ahead and try to make it match up anyway. And then they don't like it. And you're like, well, why don't you like this mix? This is what you like. Well, we just like the way the vocals sound. We don't like the whole mix. Well, that's something that you could have found out by asking questions. Like, so here's a good question. What is it about this mix that you love so much? Oh, I just love the way the kick drum sounds. Okay, now you know that you need to go for this particular kind of kick drum sound. Now, you can mesh all of these different styles of mixing and all these different references. You can absolutely use them and mix them all together. So you can use the kick reference from this and the snare reference from that over there. And, you know, as long as you can pull it together and make it sound like a cohesive mix, then you can absolutely cross-reference mixes. And if you ask your client plenty of questions, then you'll make sure that you'll get closer to the target that they want you to hit. So keep that in mind when you are mixing. Always, always have a reference mix, okay? Okay, so now we've talked about reference mixing. Here's the second thing I want you to keep in mind. You've got to find the truth in your mix, okay? So let me start off by telling a story. I was watching TV the other night, and I was watching an old episode. It wasn't Columbo, but it was one of the newer versions of that. So this murder happened, okay? And then this investigator wants to get to the bottom of it. So he starts, what does he do? He starts interviewing people, and he starts getting their side of the story for everything, okay? So, and in the end, he puts all of those stories together, and he finds the truth, because he'll find a loophole in somebody's story. He'll know that this person tells a story a certain way, and that this other person left out something in the story, right? So he puts those two together, and he finds the truth. Well, in a roundabout way, that's the way you should be doing your mixes. Not only should you be using reference mixes that you and your client kind of agree that are good directions for your mix to go, but you should also be listening to those mixes in a certain way, and I'm going to talk to you about that right now. Okay, so I know a lot of mixers. I've mixed probably 10, 15,000 songs myself. And I know other mixers who are friends of mine who have done that many or more. Almost none, I can't think of any, that use only one set of monitors. Some of them use very expensive monitors. Some of them use monitors that are not that expensive. So you're saying, what are you saying? I should get a bunch of expensive monitors? No, I'm not. I'm saying you should, what I call, triangulate a mix. Okay, now let me explain what I'm talking about. Now, I fly planes too, so I'm going to throw a little airplane reference in here, okay? Back in the day before GPSs, there were these things called VORs, and you could tune into a VOR, VHF Omni Range, and basically that VOR would tell you not only how far away you were, but on which radial, in other words, which direction you have to fly right over that tower that's just, you know, in the ground somewhere. So what you had to do in the days before GPS is you had to find out how far you were from this tower and how far you are from another tower, and then draw a line back to where you are and find out roughly where you are in the sky. And that's what I call triangulating a mix, because you were triangulating your location. Well, mixing is a lot like that, because you have to find out where you are in your mix. So I mixed with several sets of monitors. Now, for years, I mixed with Yamaha NS10s. and a sub. And if you'll look, Tom Lord Alge and Chris Lord Alge both used NS10s, Yamaha NS10s, and subs also. And that's not really the reason I did it, but I found a big love for those monitors just because I knew the story they told. If you can get the snare drum and the lead vocal to sound right and sit in good on a NS10, then it pretty much would sit anywhere you wanted it to. You could put it on any set of speakers, and the lead vocal and the snare drum would sound good pretty much anywhere you want. That's the story that the NS10s told. They didn't tell a story below in the low end. You had to get a sub for that, right? You couldn't. They wouldn't tell you much, and what they would tell you was probably not true. And then for many years, I had a set of Event 2020 bi-amplified speakers. So this was a set of 8-inch speakers, I believe, and they had two amplifiers built into them, one for the low end, one for the top end. And I started to get to know those monitors, and I mixed for years and years and years on those monitors, and then I would go between my NS10s and my Event 2020s. Actually, I didn't get my own set of NS10s until after I bought my Event 2020s, but that's neither here nor there. My point is that I would always mix on at least one or two sets of speakers and a set of headphones, because I've got another set of headphones. I've got a pretty it's kind of a pricey, I guess they're hi-fi headphones. I've got a set of Grado RS2s. Now, these things are not the cheapest things in the world, but even the less expensive model of the Grados that are around $99, I've got mastering engineer friends who use those as reference monitors. So it's a good set of monitors to pick up. I've got a set of Bose Quiet Comfort 15s, and I've also got a set of Quiet Comfort 35s. I also have a set of Yamaha RHM5As. The story that those tell me is in the low end. They won't tell me a lot of, well, they do tell me a lot. They're real hypey headphones, so they hop the bottom end a little bit and they hop the top end a little bit. So the story that those headphones tell me is if I've got too much low end and if something is sibilant and I'm not hearing it. I listen to those when I want to know for sure if a shaker's too loud or if the hi-hat's too loud. When I put those headphones on, it will tell me instantly because the high end is hyped, right? So there's a ton of monitors that I use right there, but my favorite and most expensive set of monitors, I have two. I've got a set of Micromane 27s, which are made by Barefoot. Now they are pretty pricey monitors, and I mixed almost 25 years before I got a set of monitors that were this nice. But you know what? Even those monitors at that price point, they don't tell the whole story. They don't tell me the story of the low end and the high end like my RHM5As do. And they don't tell me that where the vocal sits and the snare drum sits like my NS10s do. And they don't give me quite the imaging that my Grados do. But you know what my favorite set of monitors are? It's a Honda Element. It's a 2008 Honda Element. And the speakers in there are, for some reason, they are very, very telling. They will tell me if anything is overcompressed or if anything is out of balance, even in the slightest. I'll hear it on those car speakers before I will on these really expensive Barefoot monitors that cost about as much as the car did. It's crazy, but that's the truth. So my point is, one set of speakers is not going to tell you the whole truth. You've got to investigate like Columbo did, and you got to find out what these speakers say about what happened and ask these other speakers the same story and then see if their stories line up. And if they do, then you're good. You're good. You have to triangulate what these speakers are telling you because no speaker is going to tell you the complete truth. And if you can find a set of speakers that will tell the complete truth, you'll still want to cross-reference it with something else, your headphones, your car, a set of smaller speakers. So take my advice, and let me give you one little tip here. Take those reference mixes that you did, that you're about to gather together, and listen to each one of those reference mixes on each one of the speakers that you have reference to. It could be your car stereo, it could be your home stereo, it could be a set of earbuds that you get with your Apple iPod. It could be, you know, just a set of cheap headphones that you picked up somewhere. It could be very expensive. But listen to what these reference mixes, which are mixes that you and your client have decided that are really good references to shoot towards. Find out the story that these speakers tell you about those mixes, because sometimes even the bad speakers will tell a story that you need to hear about a mix, okay? Like if you're worried about too much low end and you listen to it on your speakers and your reference mix has too much low end on it on those speakers, then you can assume that the low end is a little hyped on these monitors, but I think it sounds fine. So when you pull your mix in and it has way too much low end, then you can kind of start saying, hey, something's not lining up here. And you can start to find out when your mix is starting to represent what you're actually hearing in your head, okay? So make sure that you cross-reference and you triangulate your mix with more than one set of monitors, okay? Okay, so we talked about in the last two sections, we talked about how to get focus in your mix, and that's finding how your mix sounds compared to one of your favorite songs that you think is mixed perfectly. And the second thing is you find the truth in your mix by triangulating your mix between several different sets of monitors. It could be headphones, it could be your car, it could be monitors in your studio, whatever. Cross-reference and find two or three of the most reliable sources for you to interview to find out where your mix is standing, okay? Now, the third thing to finding a great path to a mix, okay? Now, I wish I could tell you that there is a shortcut for learning to mix well. And the truth is, there's not, but there is a path. And I'm going to tell you about the path here in just a second, okay? Good mixes don't come to you. It's hard for a person to sit down and say, I've never mixed before, and their very first mix will be great. It's just almost impossible. I mean, you'd have to be a prodigy of some kind, and even then, you're a little bit lucky if your first mix is great, okay? Let's just admit it. Okay, so you can't get a good mix to come to you, but you can go and find a good mix. And we talked about that in the previous sections, you know, finding a good mix that you can compare your mix to, and also finding monitors that will tell you the truth about your mix. The third thing about finding a path to a great mix is that you have to just mix. In order to become a good mixer, you have to put in the hours. You have to just continuously mix. Now, where I see a lot of people go wrong is they'll find one song and they'll mix on it for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And what they find is they get more and more frustrated and they get further and further away from what they're actually going for. So my advice to you for finding a great path to mix is to mix and mix quickly. Mix like a musician would play. So let's just say you downloaded a song from somewhere on the internet and you downloaded those tracks. My advice to you would be to mix it quickly. Pull up all the faders, no plugins. Don't worry about plugins right now. A lot of people get lost in them. They get stuck in the mud here by trying to add plugins from the very beginning, where they read that this guy uses this compressor on the snare, so you do that. And this guy uses reverb, and he only uses this kind of reverb, so you do that. And then this guy always triggers a kick with this particular trigger. And then so you do that. And the next thing you know, you're sitting there and you don't know which way to turn because you've done everything everybody else tells you to do. So what I'm advising you to do is pull up a mix. Like if you go to download a mix from, say, my membership site, mixcoachmember.com, what I found is that a lot of new mixers, what they'll do is they'll download those tracks, which were cut very well, if I may say so myself. Now, I didn't cut them all, and so that's why I can brag a little bit. I didn't cut all the tracks, but they are almost every track that we have is cut very well. And most of the time, you can push the faders up on those tracks with no plugins whatsoever, and they will sound pretty good. And as a matter of fact, you could probably get by with just a few little touch-ups on those mixes. But what I find is that new mixers, when they come in, they think they have to add all of these plugins, and they really don't. And really, the honest truth is, and I've told some of my mixers this when I listen to their mixes and give them feedback on it, dude, this mix really sounded better before you did anything to it. So when you're mixing, do this. Pull up all your tracks. Maybe pull one reverb up, okay? And just push your tracks up. And when you're pushing the tracks up, get a good static mix. Okay, and then sit back from the console or the mouse, whatever you're mixing with, and ask yourself this question. What if I had one more hour to mix on this song? What is the thing that's bothering me the most about this mix? Now, I'm not saying you need to spend an hour on it. I'm saying it could be a 5-minute fix, but you don't do anything until you ask yourself this question. What could I do right now that would make this mix a little easier? Some examples could be, man, that lead vocal is just all over the place. He's loud 1 minute, and I can barely hear him the next minute. Well, you may need to either ride the fader on him a little bit or use a compressor for what it was actually designed for, and that is to minimize the dynamic range of a vocal by taking the louder parts and pushing them down so that you can pull the softer parts up and it not be too loud. It's just decreasing the dynamic range. So if you ask yourself the question, what can I do to make this mix better? And your answer was this lead vocal is just all over the place, then put a compressor in the line. That's great. You're at the place where you can do that and do it with a clear conscience because you're doing things in the right order. Now, I'm not saying you'll always mix like this, but if you're beginning or if you want to approach this in a slightly healthier way, then do this what I'm asking you to do. If the question you ask was what can make this mix better, and you find out that your drums are just muddy and mangled, then figure out which drum or which drums are muddy. That's when you start soloing things and go, wow, that kick has no form or definition at all to it. Okay, so let me mute the kick. Okay, is the problem still there? No. Okay, well, maybe it was just the kick that's bothering you about the low end, okay? So once you get this going, and before you put a ton of plugins on it, then pull your reference mix in there and listen to it against your mix, okay? And then listen to the reference mix and make sure that it's in the same genre. I mean, make sure that it's in the same genre, because I've done this before where, let me tell you a story about what I did when I was referencing the wrong mix, okay? I mixed this really cool country thing, right? And it was a modern country. Well, it was modern for its time, which this has been several years ago. And then I was referencing an early Max Martin production, which was pop. It had tons of low end in it. There were no real drums on it at all. And I had real drums on mine. So I was referencing the wrong thing. So when I took it to mastering, the poor mastering guy didn't know what to do with it, because do I make it sound like a country song, like what he was actually going for, or do I try to make it sound like this R&B song? It was a mess. And to be honest with you, I haven't even listened to that song since I did it, because it was such a bad thing. So my advice to you is make sure that when you're referencing this, make sure you pull the right reference in, okay? Okay, back to this module here, which is pull a reference mix in at this point and listen and see where you are. You've got a target there that you're shooting for, right? Where's the vocal sitting? Is their vocal brighter than yours? Okay, throw an EQ on the vocal, or maybe it's just a volume thing. Maybe you pull the vocal up a little bit. I mean, and this is how you start the path to a great mix. Okay, and speaking of a path for a good mix, remember back in the beginning of this section, I said to mix quickly like a musician. Sometimes the best thing to do is just to pull the faders up, do maybe 2 or 3 tweaks to it, and print it. Go ahead and just print it off. And then the next time you get a chance to mix it, which could be 5 minutes later, could be half an hour later, could be the next day, if you're really, practicing and want to get good at this art form that is mixing, then pull all the faders down, pull all the plugins off, and then start again. Push the faders up, check your phase of your tracks, which is something we can cover later. And just make sure that your mix sounds good. And the faster you can make it sound good, the more momentum you're going to have when you start really mixing and start dialing in your mix. Okay. So like I said, there's not a shortcut to this. You have to put in the time, but mixing is like flying. You remember I gave you a flying reference a while ago, so I'll end this with one last flying reference, okay? When I first started taking flying lessons, when I got in the plane for the first time, they put me in the left seat, which is the driver's seat of a plane, right? So I wasn't a pilot to begin with, but it didn't make it any less fun. Mixing is the same way. You may not be the mixer you want to be right now, but you're mixing, and this is fun. It's fun to kind of make rock and roll music or make country music or make gospel music. It's really fun to kind of find and stumble on these really cool things or find out what not to do. That's just as important. So even though there's no shortcut to mixing, there is a path there, and that path, you can see the end from here, okay? And you can get there if you just keep putting in the time and focusing your efforts and not just losing yourself in everybody else's plug-in signal chain, okay? So I hope that this was helpful to you. I will be in touch with you again tomorrow, and hopefully I can help you some more. So thanks for finding me on the interwebs. Thank you for downloading this audio presentation. I really hope it's been helpful, and I will see you soon, okay? This is Kevin with Mix Coach, and I'll see you soon.